Welcome to the Bards FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, and tonight you're listening to Defining Victory. This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction. Righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
Good evening, patriots. And tonight is Monday, January 15th in the year 2024. This is round two. We just started a minute ago and we got shut down, but we'll do it again. It's all good. Patriots, we have a lot of things going on in the world right now, a lot of confusion and a lot of distraction, a lot of attempts to draw us into war. And the entire principle of all of this is to keep us defined into a perpetual war and perpetual death cycle. One of the things about war and the way things are being defined is there's one way towards victory, and that victory is always towards killing thy enemy. Leaving blood rifts, especially since this war is one to pit humanity against itself, in an attempt to totally conquer and subdue what remains of the free men and women of this world. And we've got to get smarter than that. Now, tonight we're going to get into the victory, and we're going to play a piece here in just a moment that I think sets the stage very well. Before we get going, though, I need you to all remember that this cabal will do anything it can to torment us and to try to make us submit to their will. Part of that is the financial system. And the financial system that we're dealing with right now is under total siege. And they're trying to manipulate it in such a way that we ultimately have to submit as they crash the system and we watch our monies go away. While I'm not a financial advisor, nor do I wear a white coat or a doctor on TV, it's important to understand that you have to do something to protect your retirement account and your retirement savings. Part of that is to get it into something that's tangible, like precious metals. That's why we have Birch Gold. So to get hold of these folks, they're the experts in the field. You need to text the word BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, to the number 989898. That's BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, which is, quite frankly, the most popular promo code on the entire web, thanks to all you. And text it to the number 989898. Now, you're going to receive a free info packet. That'll give you a chance to read up, get informed, understand what Birch Gold can do for you. These are the experts in the field, some of the best around, and they can help you migrate your existing 401k and IRA into a precious metals retirement account, or you can set one up. Now, if you have a precious metals retirement or you have a retirement account already, that transfer into a precious metals account is no cost to you. So it's really a great time to do this, like a critical time to do this, since we are watching the dollar continue to decline in value, we're watching inflation continue to rise, and you're watching the fiat currency eat away those hard-earned dollars that you've tucked away for that retirement day. So head on over to Birch Gold. Get yourself anchored into tangible metals, precious metals, tangible product. We want to get away from the fiat currency. That's the Babylonian model. Get into hard currencies and precious metals. Get hold of them. Text BARDS, B-A-R-D-S, to 989898 and let the folks at Birch Gold guide you through this today. It's awesome. Okay, so I want to begin tonight with a message that was sent to me by Corey Terry, my good friend and brother, that on my birthday. And I think it sets the tone for everything that we're going to be talking about tonight, which is victory. Hang on a second. And here we go.
Well, happy birthday, Brother Scott. I did not know it was your birthday. I hope you have a good one. And unfortunately, I was not aware, thus didn't pick you up a gift. But I was up in Trenton visiting my students, and I thought, what better way to celebrate your birthday than come to the exact spot where George Washington and the Continental Army crossed the Delaware in the middle of the night, December 25th and 26th, 1776, right before the Battle of Trenton. The river's a little bit swollen, got a lot of rains last couple days, but what better gift, I think, is to take a piece from who knows, maybe underfoot, of George Washington, as you and others follow in the footsteps, per se, of our founding fathers and fighting for our liberties and our children's futures. God bless you, brother. Have a good day. Oh, yeah. The countersign during the attack for the Continental soldiers was victory or death.
Victory or death. That's a decision that was made by 231 people recently on the letter called the Declaration of Military Accountability, or otherwise known as the DMA or the 231. And it's in part of stepping up in this hour to now press in to one of the most important times of our life. We don't have an option but to be victorious. What's happening right now is we are at the critical cusp of a world-coordinated effort to collapse freedoms and to subdue all countries to the hands of tyranny. And they're doing it on many factions and many levels. Congress has now introduced an era, a new bill about the new COVID or the new variant X. And this new variant X is all about stripping away your rights and not if you don't comply with vaccines or anything else. And then the WHO is negotiating a new treaty right now, which has to do with setting up new international authorities. And it's known as the World Health Organization's Global Pandemic Treaty, which is a backdoor to stealing the rights of every nation whenever some fool decides that we're going to become sick again and releases or makes up some virus. This is the hour in which we live. And victory, when we do this, people tend to get backed up, especially here, and we start to think of having to go to war with guns, which is understandable. But the problem is we don't have an enemy defined that clearly at this point in time. And we need to be working towards greater efforts of finding ways through victory and understanding what victory looks like. Tonight, I want to share with you a story from Afghanistan. There was a multi-day event. It's a story I've maybe told in pieces, but I don't think I've told the whole thing. And the reason I bring this story up is it's really a great look at the concepts of what victory looks like. Now, this rolls back to about 2008, 2009. And it was in a place over in eastern Afghanistan, out of Gardez. And we were doing an operation out of a small base that was in the middle of Badland into a very heavily entrenched area. It was with a lot of Taliban. Now, this was with the 101st Airborne, and I was working with them along with American embedded trainers. And so this was going to be the great mission of their entire tour. And there was a lot of planning that went into this. We had airborne drones ready to go. There had been intel that had been gathered about a massive IED that the Taliban had planted. There was even three Afghan hostages taken. They were one of them was an interpreter, and two of them were construction workers that had been captured up in Jalalabad, and they had been moved down to this area and being held as captive prisoners for ransom. So this was all the makings of the great heroic mission to save the innocent, purge the evil, and to return home victorious. So the mission began early in the morning, like most of these types of missions do. Dark 30, a little bit after midnight, everybody assembled. Around 2 a.m., we got on the vehicles. I rode with the Afghans in probably one of the most painful rides I have ever been. It was on an 8-ton, and there was no weight in it, and so it was a miserable bouncing ride across the terrain and the rough roads of Afghanistan through the dry riverbeds and over roads that really were not roads, but they considered to be near freeways at the speeds at which they drove. And literally, I was finding myself completely banged up and my kidneys being bruised, which just happens, but I'm just literally being beaten your kidneys up with your body armor slamming into you, and you're just trying to endure the ride. On top of that, you're in an open flatbed, pretty cold out, but that's all part of it. And so as we moved into the area, I remember very clearly we got in, and 101st members dismounted, and they began their insertion, which was going to be in the cover of darkness. And this was going to be a classic great infantry maneuver. They were going to come into this village. They had pretty good intel where the Taliban were. And the Afghans were going to go on the lower flank and to surround this village, do the big shoot-up, kill all the Taliban, do the extraction of the intel, find the hostages, free them, and then from them hopefully find the IED. Well, as we got in here, slowly in, we got to a certain point. The 101st Airborne deployed. We went up the road a little bit, and the Afghans kicked on their lights, and they drove in. And this was everything we had worked for the last 4 or 5 hours of movement. It was blown in one big movement. It was the lights were on, and we drove boldly right into the village. And I will never forget the 101st Commander, who was, this is kind of like man who eats the heads off of chickens talks to an Afghan who is literally handing him flowers. And I'm not kidding. You have to kind of get this image in your head because this is literally the clash of cultures right here. So as the 101st commander steps up and he talks to the Afghan commander, and he's angry. He's obviously angry. The mission now has been blown. He's had to have his troops move in a different way. The whole insertion, the idea of in darkness was blown. The cover of darkness was lost. And the announcement, we are now at sunrise and we are in the village and lights had been on and everybody had been disturbed. And as the 101st Airborne Commander comes up to the Afghan colonel literally hands him a cookie. And this is, you just have to imagine this in your head, where you have meat eater meets man with cookie. And it is a little bit of sparks, you might say. And there's a lot of words said that we're not going to repeat here tonight. And the 101st Airborne Commander is yelling at him. And he's like, what did you do? What is your problem? And the Afghan commander says, it's the cookies. And now you have to understand, a lot of the work I did over there was always about translating cultural differences. And this was really one of these epic moments that I'm watching this and I'm listening and I'm starting to get a handle of what the Afghan commander is trying to convey. And so he's explaining to him in broken English and we get an interpreter up. And the 101st Airborne guy is focused purely on the intensity of the fight, the brilliance of American firepower, the maneuver, the tactics, everything. We are going to slaughter the Taliban. We're going to lean them slate. And the Afghan commander is talking to him about cookies. And this is not going over well. Trust me, this is not a good moment. And what the Afghan commander was telling him is, we already knew where the Taliban were because they always come for the cookies. Now, this would seem impossible in most of our way of thinking, because who in the world, why would the Taliban come into a village for cookies? Now, this village had been infiltrated by Taliban. They were under a lot of pressure by Taliban, but there was this strange symbiotic relationship with the Taliban in this village because of the cookies. The cookies were the best. I don't like Afghan cookies. I want to be very clear about it. They're strangely dry, little taste, hardly any sweetness. It tastes very much like pieces of cardboard with taking a little bit of sugar and putting them on top. But they love them. That's irrelevant. And how they value cookies is very different than how you and I value cookies. Nonetheless, this village had a reputation of having the best cookies in the entire region. And the commander had some extremely brilliant cultural logic that was being lost here. They knew where the Taliban were because the Taliban always in the early morning would get the cookies. And he also knew something else. While we were trying to be very stealth, they already had us pegged. They had us pegged 10 miles, if not 20 miles out. The watchers that are around, the information that gets passed, they know we're coming in. So the Afghan commander was actually ahead of the game. And what he did is he went and he brought his troops in and this drove right into the village and went right to the cookie shop, literally the cookie bakery. And in the process, found that the Taliban had been there quite a bit earlier, had purchased quite a bit of cookies and had fled to the mountains. And so they sat down, and while we were maneuvering in, thinking that there was some measure of darkness until we got there to discover the Afghans were there with lights on and all eating cookies, the commander had gone in and met with the village elders, sat down and literally drank chai and ate cookies and got all sorts of intel. Now, this is like part one of the story. There's three parts to this. And it's an important point here is that the concept of victory in that moment was completely lost and shot for the 101st. The tactics, the way that we thought about war, the perceptions of how to fight, everything was framed around a paradigm which was not applicable there. And I'm not saying it could not be done, but not the way we were doing it. And that measure of surprise would have had to have been done, and even then it may not have been successful, by a helicopter insertion or something like that with fast roping and various other things that maybe they would have secured a few Taliban. But what the commander understood is as we moved in, the Taliban were going to do something, which is cultural. And it's important I get to this point is that we have to be aware of the cultural issues to understand how to communicate with one another and what victory brings. And it was cultural. And the cultural thing is the Taliban would load up on cookies and they would head up into the mountains. And he was right. That's exactly what they did. So in the process of this anger and this fury of the fact that the mission was blown and there was nothing else to do for that part of the mission, that the 101st didn't get their kill, the Afghan commander had managed to build amazing relationships with the villagers, which they hadn't been there before. And his soldiers had all gone in then as they moved in to buy cookies, which gave the community a lot of revenue. So everybody began to love the Afghan army. It's quite brilliant, actually. So we continued for the next few days and we did patrols. We did patrols through the village and really found very little of anything. Small evidence of Taliban, a small radio station that looked like somebody had hooked up that could have been related to Taliban. Everybody looking, a few gunshots in the mountainsides, which when that happens, everybody gets a little excited. And in the most part, not much was happening. The intel of where these hostages were was very scant. And in the meantime, the soldiers got to be part of a little bit of an event that was there, that this soldier's being part of the community, interacting with them. And in that process, a wallet was stolen. And the wallet was taken by one of the soldiers that had his IDs and had money. And so that immediately, there's a standoff. And American soldiers are angry. They feel that they've been betrayed. There's a lot of this going on. And of course, this imagination that all these maturations that are going on and what it's going to cost in far as headache and time to get the IDs replaced, the reports that were going to have to be filed, the money that was lost, etc. So the Afghans took it over to the imam and took it to the temple. And he just asked at the mosque, can they please see if they can find the problem and who did it? And in the meantime, Americans are pretty hot, pretty excited. And in this whole process then, as we go through the night, there's these drones that are flying over. And this is classic of just poor deployment of assets. The drones weren't flying over to look for Taliban. They were literally had been deployed by command, and this is not an exaggeration, to ensure that the 101st Airborne soldiers were properly in kit, meaning that they were properly wearing their uniforms, they were properly wearing their helmets. We were not worrying about the enemy. We were worrying about what our soldiers were doing within on a combat patrol, mind you. And they had been told this before we left, that this was a possibility, and it was confirmed by radio communication that they were being monitored, so make sure that they were all wearing their kit properly. The next morning, as we're getting ready to pack up, things are getting packed up, the imam comes over with a couple of gifts, and there's quite a bit of confusion. First is the wallet, which they had gone to the community, and he had asked, and the wallet had been returned to the imam with all the money and everything intact. And this was an amazing moment, too, of a little bit of people swallowing pride, because there was a lot of accusations made that proved not to be true. And the fact that the wallet was returned with everything, it was a very gracious gift and offering by the community. But he brought something else with him. He brought three people. He brought with him the three hostages, which was a lot of confusion on who these hostages were. I mean, who these people were. Three people, they were dirty. They had chain marks on their ankles, and they had been bruising from their ankles, or they'd been chained on their wrists as well. Photographs were quickly taken. Photographs were sent up, sent back, confirmed these were the three hostages. Now, remember the story. This was supposed to be the great operation to save the hostages. And the point that the drones were actually used to monitor 101st Airborne troops. But that's not how it was perceived. The story that was put together here pretty quickly in the intel debrief was that the Taliban had thought that the drones were armed drones, which had been Reaper drones, and were hunting them and were convinced that they had seen them. So in a matter of in a panic and fear moment, the Taliban released these hostages who had been in captivity for several weeks, had hardly eaten, and sent them away and then ran further into the mountains. So the hostages moved their way down into the camp and went to the mosque where the imam received them and then brought them over to us. There was a lot of disbelief on this story from the American side, and on the Afghan side, this was total victory, complete and total victory. In fact, they radioed up to their headquarters, which was a good few hours away, and told them they had accomplished the mission and that to send out a team to meet them and to help clean up these hostages when we got out of the AO, the area of operation. So we packed up, a lot of frustration on the American side, a lot of celebration on the Afghan side, and we left through this dried riverbed that we drove in on, which was actually fairly common in Afghanistan. Miles of rough terrain to finally arrive at the main road. And when we got to the main road, the Americans moved on and the Afghans stayed because the Afghan headquarters company had moved in and set up massive pots of rice and goat and slaughtered meat to celebrate the return of the captive Afghans from captivity to victory. Now let's look at the two stories here real quickly. American perception of victory would have been to move in by night, stealthily operate, find the enemy with silenced weapons, kill every one of them, leave them dead, to then leave their bodies there for other people to be reminded of, that never to mess with us again. They would have then secured somewhere along the way intel, which they could have exploited on the site or sent up for exploitation, given directions on where to go, maneuvered up into the mountains, found the hostages, killed off a few more enemies, cut the chains, released them, carried them out, even sent a helicopter in to celebrate the victory, then go home with the kills under their belt and the victorious notions underneath them. The village would have been secondary. The imams would have been informed, as well as the elders of the operation, and we would have considered this a secure and successful operation. From the Afghans' perception, victory began with the cookies. They didn't need to worry about intel. They just needed to find out where the cookies were. And in so doing, they sat down and literally had a nice breakfast while everybody else was trudging around the mountains. They had tea. They ate plenty of cookies. And the village was very happy to inform them where the Taliban were, which was up in the mountains. And in the process, the next few days, the Afghans spent a lot of time eating a lot of cookies, spending a lot of their money in the village, making the village extremely happy. The village then became very warm to them, very secure with them. And then when the wallet was stolen and the Afghans interceded with the imam, it was a natural thing to say that this was an inappropriate thing. The child that took the wallet brought the wallet back. The imam brought it to the Americans, and it was a gesture of good faith to demonstrate that they were not at odds with us. They were welcoming us because the Afghans ultimately had bought cookies. I'm not exaggerating about any of this. As the hostages come down, even though from our perspective it was a ridiculous outcome of a very nasty way of application of drones, and the soldiers were openly pissed off about the fact that the drones were being used to monitor them and their clothing, those drones had a secondary function, which is to scare the Taliban, which the Afghans thought was fantastic because the American might of the air scared the Taliban, which released the hostages, which created a complete victory of a mission, which in the Afghan model worked perfectly. No shots fired, peace made with village, great cookies eaten, and a fantastic meal at the other end of the operation where they could all sit around and celebrate and literally dance and eat chicken and rice in mass quantities and then pack up and go home, knowing that their brethren had been returned from the evil hands of the Taliban. Two perspectives of victory that are extremely different and extremely important to comprehend, because what we're dealing here is one that is based on engagement, and one that is based on lethality. Now, we're going to wrap this story up with just another part, and then I'm going to bring it all together. Part of the mission, as I told you, was to locate an IED. There was a Russian 2,000-pound bomb that the intelligence had shown that the Afghans or the Taliban had got hold of and turned it into a significant IED, improvised explosive device, and set it up on a main convoy route. In the process, the Americans and the Afghans located the IED. They located it. But as the Americans began to undo it, they realized that this was not going to be something that they were willing to do, so they called for EOD, which was the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Team. In the Explosive Ordnance Disposal Team, however, it was going to be about 2 to 3 days, if not longer, to get there. So what was ordered was sit on the site and protect it. The Afghans don't like that too much. And they also wanted to impress their American trainers and partners that they could handle this. So it's late at night, back on the firebase, and the 101st Airborne Commander now is asleep. And as he tells the story, he hears the footsteps of his CQ runner, which is from the headquarters office. There's a person that works to run messages at night and answer phones and so forth. And his CQ runner came and timidly was coming up to the commander's room. And the commander tells the story. He says, he sits up and he says, "What?" And he says, "Sir, I hate to wake you." He says, "What's the problem?" He says, "The Afghans have secured the IED. And he says, "So what's the problem?" He says, "Well, sir, it's a 2,000-pound Russian bomb." He says, "I know. That's what Intel said. He said, "What's the problem?" He said, "It's parked in the truck next to your hut." The commander immediately jumped out of bed, raced out the hallway with hardly anything on, taking a look, and there it was, the Russian 2,000-pound bomb in the back of a small Ford pickup sitting right behind his hut. The Afghans were thrilled. They had demonstrated their ability not only to locate, but to take out the threat of the IED and to bring it to the commander to show him that victory was achieved. Problem is, it was still live ordnance. So there was an immediate rush and flurry to get this off the base because something of this magnitude of the size of base we were on would have leveled most of everything. It took two weeks before an explosive ordnance team could literally arrive at the site. And at that time when they arrived and the truck had since been moved out around the ridge, they looked at the size of the explosive and they said, that's not even far enough. And they drove it even a couple miles, not even a mile, but like a mile farther up the hill. When they finally detonated it, it still showered the base with gravel and rock. Again, the difference in victory. There's a lot I learned in Afghanistan and the perspectives of war that I think are very important. It's always why you hear me so often lean towards and walk in towards the walk that our special forces do, because they understand these stories. And in so many ways, they live these stories. And these stories are the way of true victory, because it's a buy-with-through model. It's ability to work with and through the culture to achieve victory. Why is this important right now? Because right at this very moment, we are facing a very critical moment in our history. It's unlike anything we've ever seen. They are pitting us against each other every single day. They're doing every single thing they can to get us to hate one another, to hate each other, even in churches. Churches, in fact, are doing some of the worst damage in siding on wars, for example, with Israel, trying to encourage the idea of the annihilation of an entire culture of Palestinians. I have no idea where that has a biblical root, but there's no biblical root whatsoever. But it's the frenzy of war. It's this bloodthirst that people have in this idea of this psychological war of hatred. What Afghans were constantly good at, and I'm not going to tell you they were always successful, and I'm not going to tell you that it was always the right way, but the one thing at the center of everything they did was a principle of engagement, something I did a lot of. And it was literally sitting with their enemy and talking things over, usually over goat and rice. And I've done way too many of those. And I would say most Special Forces guys have done way too many of those, because it's sitting there and listening to the endless droning of problems and cultural differences, because things work at a different pace. And there's time taken, and literally time taken to eat a meal and talk a problem through, breaking bread. We don't do a lot of that. We do a lot of quick pointing. We do a lot of quick accusation. We do a lot of rapid assessment and positioning and taking sides, especially in the world of politics, and especially in our daily life. We make quick assessments about people because on their outside, they put a Biden sticker and we're immediately judging them and saying there's no commonality. When in fact, actually statistics show the opposite, that there's people even with Biden stickers right now are against what's going on the southern border. These are things we have to keep in mind, because we're entering into a very toxic area of our time, a very hyper-polarized space in our time. This is a time when they want to pit us against each other, and there will be challenges, big ones. There's a lot of discussion right now about something even bigger than what we normally think, things like a massive solar flare. This is starting in the news again. Is it real? I have no idea. But the warnings are massive grid down type situations. We're seeing these spot power grids going down. Our grid system in the United States is horrific. It's ancient. It goes back to 1920 in some places. If you've been during this storm, even here in Oregon, we're getting reports of lots of power outages. We had a power outage out on Saturday that lasted for 3 or 4 hours. They went 60 miles north. Portland right now has places of power outage that will be there. Thousands of people without power that will be without power for 2 or 3 more days. I just got a report from Everin Carson, who owns Carson Shoes, who's over in Grass Valley, Oregon, about 2.5 hours out of Portland. They have 100 inches of snow, and they have no power. My point of this is there's a lot of stressors coming. The thing that is critical to this is, what's the state of our community? How are we engaged with our community? Are we ready to work together? The amazing thing in this fight is that when you start to work at this level of operations, especially with this sort of fidelity, you start to realize very quickly that there is another way for warfare. The buy-with-through model, the unconventional warfare model, does not seek to go after killing thy enemy en masse. It works to build relations even when people work in what we call the space of gray. They might be a little bit dirty, they might be a little bit bad, but there's still a lot of value in what they bring. In 2016, we put together a letter called, it was the endorsement for President Donald J. Trump, and it was put out by the group that I was running called Kilroy Rising. If you don't know what Kilroy is, Kilroy was the psychological warfare operation led against the Germans, brilliant, that drew Kilroy and had Kilroy going on boxes over to the World War, to the European zone. Kilroy was even showing up in Berlin. It was like the first viral imagery or viral meme that was actually being drawn on walls. Hitler was so paranoid of Kilroy that he assigned a special team in the SS to investigate how Kilroy had infiltrated Berlin. The point of all this is that in this legacy that we're in, and we are in that time, that, and what we were representing is we put out this statement of a letter. We took this position. And we, in this warfare that we're in right now, we have to start understanding that we have to start making positions and stands, and we have to start working towards understanding the value of our neighbors. We have to start coming together and understanding the positioning that we're in right now so that we start bringing people together and not dividing people. And the whole principle of this UW work that we're in right now, unconventional warfare, which every single one of you is part of, is that we have to step into a place where we start working together and building bridges. The Kilroy operation, what we did more than anything is we spent time on the ground in communities. We met with the unconventional. We met with the gang members. We met with those that were even motorcycle gangs who were running drugs. We met with the people that no one wanted, the rejects of society that no one wanted to talk to. We met with the people that had lost all their jobs and were working, had a master's degree, working in the bar as a waitress. We met with people that were what we would have called tin hatters at the time, were people that were pushing medical marijuana, which was another fringe group, or people at that time that were talking about vaccine damage, which is mainstream now but wasn't then. People that were talking about chemtrails, that was mainstream now but wasn't then. We were meeting with all the fringe groups. And what were we doing with the fringe groups? We were meeting with militias that was another level of crazy. But every single time what we were doing was engaging them, talking to them, and learning how to bring them together into a fold of one, to understand how we could work better together. Ultimately, we were breaking bread. The mission in Afghanistan that I was part of, the mission that so many Special Forces guys were part of, was that mission of building that buy-with-through model, to be able to bring people into the fold, to learn to listen to their stories, to understand what they were doing, to work, let them lead the fight and not you be on the point of the fight. And in this moment in time, we need to be doing this more than ever. We need to literally be stepping in and building relationships. Now, as a throwback to where this show began tonight, from Corey Terry's message, there is such a thing as victory that we have to stand for, and we have to understand the consequences of what we're talking about when we lean into victory. Victory has a risk. Victory has a risk in this time because this government is evil. It is a tyranny. It is no different than 1776. The difference is that when you look at them, they wear suits, they wear ties, they wear the uniforms of the day that make us all look the same. We don't have red coats. We have people of just the same look and caliber in a country that's much more diverse than it was in 1776. We have people that have brought in from the border. They've been put across our United States to be armed in hatred of the United States. We have a new class of people coming across, immigrants with children, that all we can think about in this inflaming moment is how to kick them out. But we're not putting enough emphasis on the engagement aspect of how to bring them in. And that's the whole point. Because when you can sit with somebody who's truly bad and you can start to win their favor, you gain something you can't imagine. You gain an access to their network and an access to the people that they move and shake that already understand how to work around the government and be successful because that's how they've gotten there. One of the things that we discussed in 2016 as an alternative, for example, for when we expected the internet to be shut down, and we did, it didn't happen. We were building networks with what I would call very unconventional type of people, networks that could move paper flyers. Just old school. We were creating a network of people on motorcycles and other people that transported things that were accustomed to having to get past authorities. We were using this concept with printing, so we went old school. We were printing stuff, prepared to print stuff, I should say, to where we could print flyers and then distribute them on these networks of people that could move freely throughout the society because they already knew how to do it for illicit means. Think this way. What is evil can be turned to good, and especially when people understand the cause and what's at risk. The greatest lesson that came out of 2016 is when we sat with Bloods and Crips, when we sat with Tin Hatters and hardcore militia people walking into meetings, armed, slamming guns down on the table, telling you, I'm going to go kill this person or that person, and having that defusing conversation where you're like, no, you're not, and let us walk you through why. And when we get through with those conversations, to have them look at you and say, I like your way. How do we get closer to this? That's a win. And that's meeting people where they are. That's meeting people and understanding that what these people have to deliver is something greater. At the same time, as they win, as you win them, they suddenly, they're like, well, we've got a ham radio network, and we've got this asset, and we've got that asset. And all of a sudden, when you feel like you can't overcome a problem, you gain things that you may never have even known about, because you've not had to work in the space of the fringe or the gray. Because these people are brilliant. They're just application of how they've done it. I mean, you may not agree with, but that's irrelevant. And I say all this because this is a point where you have to take a step back from this rigid value structure to say that somehow the morality objects to working with these people. This is where the principle of bringing people to Jesus is so important. Because as we talk this and we teach people and use that as part of the discussions that we're in, we start to bring people over and save them at the same time, yet gain what they have that God gave them. God wastes nothing. And this is the most important part of this. What I saw in Afghanistan was brilliant. I saw a colonel outperform a 101st commander. I'm not blaming the 101st commander. He fought the war the way he saw it. But what he failed to do was to appreciate what the Afghan commander would bring to the fight. His role was to teach the Afghan commander how they would fight. In the end, if there had been listening, the Afghan commander would have taught him how to win Afghanistan. It's a big difference. Our wars right now are very different. We're in a different era. This isn't a war of blood and guns, because that's what Hollywood puts out. That's what they want everybody to believe. That's what they're inoculating every single person with every single day. We're going to civil war, this sort of thing. But we're not. Not unless we let ourselves. Instead, we need to be spending our time talking to our neighbors. We need to be taking time to go have coffee and a donut. You need to be baking bread and bringing bread to a family member next door so that you break bread together. You need to start getting accustomed to helping a neighbor when the lights go out. Are you checking in with them? We're in a rural area on this 80 acres. The lights go out, and my neighbor, who sits across the valley, and I can barely see his house, but I can see it there. We still had cell service. He texts me, are you all okay? Yes, Paul, we're good. Thank you. Lights, we've got this going. Do you need any help? No, we're good up here. We've got our generators. Paul's 600 meters from my property. I know that because that's part of our long-distance shooting range, and we're good. We look out for each other. We don't see each other much. It doesn't matter. In the moment when it counts, your neighbor should be there, and you have to be there for them too. And that begins with simple engagement. You may not agree with their politics. You may not agree with even their belief systems, but you will win their hearts and minds over when you meet them where they are and you show them the authorities that you carry as someone who truly loves them and cares for them. And that's the biggest lesson of all of this. Because really, here we were as a Christian army, and we're being lessened by a Muslim army. And I'm honest about this, because the true sense of the Christian heart and what happened in that army right there. And we didn't like the way it played out. The command didn't like the fact that they'd spent literally weeks planning this operation. There was so much in it for them to own and be part of. They didn't like the fact that in this time, they weren't going to get to get the excitement of the battle and so forth. But the greatest victory occurred because when we left, that village was forever our friend. That village wanted the Afghans back. They invited the Americans back. They wanted us to come back and visit, and they wanted us to come back and buy cookies. And there was a ton of cookies purchased. Even by the end of the time we were there, even the American soldiers were buying the cookies. I think some of that's just the desperation to eat something other than an MRE, but that's another point. It's a great lesson, and it's a great reminder, and even the release of the prisoners. Look at the difference. We're looking at the operation. That army did not pray before they went in. I need to be clear about this. The American army did not pray going in. The Afghan army did. And here's the whole thing that comes together. So when we look at that from a different lens of prayer, take religion out of it. Just look at it this lens from prayer. What does victory look like when God moves the armies? God is the creator of all things. I'm not going to talk about whether they're praying to in Islam versus the praying in Christianity. I'm just talking about the power of prayer right now, the prayer of prayer, because in the end of the day, there's only one God. I don't care how many people tag it, how we do with it, what we talk about it. There's one God, one true God, and it's through Christ. And so the Afghan army prays, and the American army doesn't. And the irony is that in God's world, there shouldn't be a bloody flesh fight. There should be, unless it's absolutely at his will, there should be something like this where cookies lead to the release of prisoners, and that's literally God's hand. So if you look at it from the two armies, you're like, okay, there's another lesson to learn. We should have been praying into that fight. We have to get anchored into what is the most valuable tools of war we have. And that begins with prayer. And it begins with the principles of what Pastor Dave Bryan of Glad Tidings Church calls the short list. Share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Heal the sick. Cast out demons. Raise the dead. And then seek the greater works. That's pretty straightforward. And when we use those tools of war, each and every one of us in our local communities, we're building a bed, a foundation, a rock that won't be shakable. And when that time comes, which it may or may not, I didn't expect the power to go out for 3 hours the other night, but it did. And even though we took us a moment to get everything in order, we were prepared and our neighbor was there with us. And we were there with our neighbor. And there are other neighbors around that would have been there as well if we needed them. Community is how we win this. And getting down to the local community and detaching from this insanity of thinking like, you know, if the Chinese are going to invade or the Russians are going to fly over and drop paratroopers, I don't know, whatever else they're going to come up with. The ISIS fighters are going to infiltrate our cities and kill lots of people, whatever. Where we need to remain is in the prayer focus of what we're doing, what Jesus would do, the heart of Jesus, the heart of God. And as we start to do that, engage one another and seek what God would want, we start to build a tremendous relationship in our community. Your neighbors may not believe in everything you believe. They may not want to read the Bible, but I will tell you, they will not turn down the love that you deliver to them. And in so doing, we build an incredible fabric, an incredible foundation, an incredible network locally that you can count on, that they can count on, and it's resilient, and it's God's way of winning a war. Because when you do that, evil can't persist. Evil can't find a foothold. Evil can terrorize, but it can't persist. And I'll just give you another layer to it because it's critical and it's the most important part. Let's just take the worst possible scenario. All things fall apart. All things fall apart. And now we're into this warlordism. There are people, and you're reading 231 names that are going to always fight for the reunification of the United States. You have to know that. And there's many more of them. But they can't do it alone. And what they need is they need a bed to work off of, a basis, a rock, and that's the job of everybody in their community. Because when a special forces team walks in, they're not in there just to train you with guns. They're there to get you stabilized, to try to get you organized in many different aspects. They're going to help you mobilize different things to make sure that the community resources are strong to sustain. They can't do that if a community's fragmented and hates each other. And that's what these fools up top want you to be. So don't. Reject it. Take time to choose the most egregious neighbor you have, the most difficult personality you have. Target them, literally, and say, God, I am going to make this person at least amicable to me. Find their weak point. And what can be their weak point? Chocolate chips are a good start, by the way. Chocolate chip cookies, great start. And just like we begin, you can win a war with cookies. You can defeat an enemy with cookies. You can identify where an enemy is with cookies. And in the end, you can free prisoners with cookies. I've seen it. Call it God's hand. Call it a miracle. Call it clumsy luck. I don't care what you call it. I saw an entire operation won because a commander had the courage to go down and sit with the elders and buy a bunch of cookies and drink tea. And in the process, they won and the enemy lost. That's a story. And that's something to take with prayer and something to walk into your neighborhood with and wage war. And it's the best waging war ever because at the end of the day, the kitchen's going to smell good, the neighborhood's going to love it, and that cranky old neighbor, you'll probably get a smile on their face. Let's pray. Father God, we just come to you tonight just very blessed, honored with all of these patriots that come together each and every day, prayer warriors and people of heart that love this nation, that want to see this nation return to the values and strength in which it was built. A mighty nation built on your words, your promises, your directives to us and your gifts to us. The authorities we were given, the pursuit of life, happiness, and the pursuit of and liberty were given to us. Each of these things given to us by you that no one can take away unless we give them away. And we will not. We will not bow. Father, we are blessed with the voices of those that will stand up and raise others, many, not just those on the 231, but those as well across the nation in their communities that are standing up and say, hey, follow me. Hey, look at me. Hey, I'm here to help. But Father, we pray a blessing upon everybody tonight. to have the courage now to step forward, to take time, to reach out and engage your neighbor, to find the most difficult neighbor and to make them smile, to make them your friend, to build a community, and to do it quickly, efficiently, and with focus, understanding that time is of the essence. And it's also something that is all of you. It's part of love, loving thy neighbor. So, Father, we just pray that blessing of loving thy neighbor upon the hearts of the many. May they wake up now. May they raise up. May we be the agents of bringing them to a greater place. Let us drop our expectations of sowing a single seed to bring them right to Christ, but rather let's return to the principle of sowing seeds and doing the efforts that are necessary to break bread and to literally forge relationships that are lasting and enduring and that will be prepared for the times to come. Victory is fought. Victory is achieved in many forms. Wars are fought in many ways. And if anything we can learn from the lessons of past histories is that at times wars can even be won with cookies. Father, bless us and guide us in this time. And we say these things in Christ Jesus' name. Amen. So, patriots, bake some cookies, make sourdough bread, get engaged, check out your neighbors, share seeds, help them with their gardens. Let's do what we need to do. We've been talking this for 3.5 years, and the hour's upon us. There's a lot of things coming, big ones, and we have to be the leaders in our communities. That's what we've been prepping for. This is the time. So win a war with cookies. Can't hurt to try, and I'll tell you what, if your neighbor doesn't like them, some other neighbor will, and you'll have a great time talking about cookies and drinking some coffee or tea. And all that happens with that is a better relationship for a better moment in time when you need each other and you have to count on each other when it all counts. So keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press into the fight. God is with us. He'll never forsake us. And in the end, God always wins. But we are here in this time, in this place, for just such a time as this. We're at war. So walk boldly and fearlessly with Christ. Occupy the land. Expand the kingdom. Subdue the enemy. Mission forward. Patriots, I'll see you tomorrow morning for Bended Knee. Until then or until the next time, God bless, good night, thank you, and out for now.
Oh, I want to feel something. I just want to breathe again. Dive into the deepest end. Oh, I want to feel something. Get back in my body. Oh, I wanna open my hands. I know that healing is for me. I wanna breathe again. Oh, I wanna feel something. I just wanna.
Close to me, look how